won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground. No, we won't take it, said a voice from the crowd. No, you won't pass the policy if it holds us down.
Well, good morning, everyone. Happy Friday and June 1st to all of you. This is Bill, Sarah's producer, and Sarah will be joining us in a few minutes as she is out taking, at a meeting, actually, and so had a little bit of a schedule conflict. So nonetheless, today, as always, we will be starting our show with Yuri Rashkin from Defend Wisconsin News Roundup, followed by Scott Witkoff with Badger Democracy. He will be talking about the budget and job numbers that the governor released early. In our second hour, we will start the hour off with Mike McCabe from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, and he will be discussing the money in the recall. And then we will be concluding the show with a discussion with Bruce Felt from Michigan Rising, as they are in Michigan attempting to recall their governor as we are. So a couple of quick announcements. Next Friday, June 8th, we will not have a show, and you can listen to the show on WIDE, WHYS, or WFAQ. Sarah will be having a Best of the Sarah Schultz show next week, and she will be back in 2 weeks on June 15th. So with that, and then of course there is another announcement. Don't forget to exercise your democratic duty and vote on June 5th, or if possible, you can vote early and do that today, as today is the last opportunity for you to vote early. So with that, let's bring on Mr. Yuri Rashkin. And Yuri, I will just say,
yes,
hi,
I'm
how
here.
Are you?
I'm doing great. I didn't want to interrupt your introduction. It was like rolling along, and you know, I was waiting for my moment to come in. So yes, here I am. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm doing great, thank you, sir. I just wanted to, I'm just sitting here filling in for Sarah, using my feet and hands, doing the boards and making sure that everything is running properly and trying to talk at the same time. And fortunately, I'm not chewing gum because I think that would overtax my system. But anyway, sir, how are things with you, and what do you have for us today?
Well, I think the main news in Wisconsin is we're coming down to recall. These are the final days, and today, as you exactly accurately mentioned, today is the last day to vote absentee. So if you have an opportunity to go to your municipal building and vote absentee, you should do that. Now, here in Janesville, we had an interesting twist on that because we had Tom Barrett stop in a couple of days ago, and we had a rally at our local Dems office, which happens to be about a block and a half away from the municipal building. And Tom graciously stopped in and gave a very nice, rousing speech. The room, I don't think I've ever seen it that full, and I don't know if I'll ever again see it that full. It was just bursting at the seams. There were TV crews from all over the place. For some reason, it appears that this campaign and this recall is playing very well in Japan. But there were several Asian gentlemen with TV cameras that really looked like they were not from Janesville. And I asked them where they were from. They were from Japan TV. And in yesterday's debate, I think they acknowledged some Japanese viewers as well. So maybe this whole democratic exercise is just playing well there, like Spinal Tap. We're huge in Japan. So we had a great rally. And then after that, we walked over. And Tom, being a smart man that he is, waved to us from, you know, he was across the street from the polling place, which I think is where he's supposed to be. So then a bunch of us went over there and voted early. It was just a great experience. And I tell you the truth, I've never voted early before because I really like voting on the election day. I think it's a wonderful, it's like a holiday. It's a democracy holiday. You go and you vote. That's how you celebrate. Although I guess you can
right.
celebrate afterwards by bringing more friends to the poll. But this time I felt like it was important to do it beforehand, and it was really nice kind of to do it that way. You know, with the guy that you're going to vote for, there he is. You can go with him. So if you have an opportunity to vote, you should definitely do that. Now,
yeah, I just wanted to interrupt you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You were saying about the Japanese individuals that were there covering this event, and I have been hearing as well that there are other international correspondents representing various countries in Wisconsin and covering this recall election, because a lot of people in those countries are very interested in what is going on in Wisconsin because of the austerity measures that are being introduced by the conservative elements in those countries, which appear not to be working, but nonetheless are being forced down the throat here on the people in Wisconsin and throughout the nation. So I just wanted to make reference of that. But by all means, continue. And I also would like to assure everyone that you don't have to listen to my droll voice, as Sarah is back and she will be on with us in a few minutes. So please continue, sir.
All right. All right. That's a very interesting observation because, yes, we are very much looking at the effects of austerity politics. The other reason I think that people are paying attention all around the globe to Wisconsin is because this is continuation of that people's movement and the democratic reforms. This is not exactly Arab Spring, but this is another opportunity for us, the people, to make our opinion known about our government. And I think this is kind of playing into the various movements that we see around the globe. And now the battle has shifted to Wisconsin. And frankly, we're showing how it's done in a peaceful and democratic way. This is not Syria. We are marching to the polls, and we're casting our votes as I think everyone should. And in fact, the latest numbers I'm hearing is that we're going to have 60 to 65% turnout, according to GAB, the Government Accountability Board. And I think that's really good. Except that I believe in France they had an 80% voter turnout for the presidential election they just had. But incidentally, Wisconsin has a historically, you know, we have a reputation for having high voter turnout. So by the United States standards, 65% voter turnout is pretty impressive. So let's see where that goes, because I don't think there's too many people in the state that are undecided. We just got to make sure that everyone's decided, especially if they're for a recall, go out and vote. Probably the biggest item of discussion today, the two main things are, first of all, there's a big get-out-the-vote rally that's happening this morning in Milwaukee, and it's going to feature Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett and former President Bill Clinton, and that's really exciting. I've been, and myself and many people I spoke to have been saying that we need to have a big rally before the election. There was some discussion about whether it is a good idea to take people away from the get out the vote effort. But I think that getting people energized for a few hours is only going to do lots of good, especially since it's interesting that they chose Milwaukee.
Do you think that for a little bit of a delay. Do you think that the arrival of former President Bill Clinton is a way that the DNC is supporting the Barrett campaign in light of the criticisms that the DNC and the Obama administration have taken for not paying too much attention to the Democratic Party here and the progressives and others, individuals who have supported the recall?
Well, I think we can all speculate about what goes on in Washington, D.C., and I don't think either one of us has a really good and firsthand knowledge of the dynamics that are playing there, but I think that having President Clinton come out it highlights, first of all, how important this race is. I mean, I've been, there was an interview with Scott Walker and Tom Barrett on the National Public Radio just yesterday or maybe the day before. So this is a very much a national race, and even if President Obama feels like this is not something that he wants to be involved in personally, which I think has been his approach over the last 3 years, 3.5 years. It's been, there's no question that this race is being paid close attention to nationwide. And I think sending somebody like Bill Clinton, who is extremely popular, but yet holds no official position within the United States government, and I think being husband of Secretary of State is not an official position. So he makes them, you know, he's very uniquely qualified to come out and show his support without having any official endorsement behind him. But you know that the turnout is going to be great in Milwaukee, and having everybody we can possibly have voting in Milwaukee is crucial, because there's going to be lots and lots of counties where Scott Walker is being perceived as speaking the truth. And that's unfortunate, but that is reality. And long term, we have to do lots of education, but short term, we have to go out and vote. And Madison and Milwaukee are historically important. I just think it's interesting that the rally is going to be in Milwaukee and not in Madison, because clearly I think Madison's already energized. And Milwaukee is where they clearly feel like they need to turn out and increase the turnout. So let's hope for the best.
Good morning, Yuri.
Hey, Bill, what happened? Just kidding. Hey, Sarah, how are you?
I'm good. Bill is still on. I'd like to thank Bill, my producer, for taking over the reins while I got back. So thank you so much for doing that. He's going to stay on with us while we talk with you, Yuri. So it's nice to see that the DNC and some of the heavy hitters for the party are coming out, because I know Debbie Wasserman Schultz is also going to be coming out within the next couple of days to do a fundraiser with Baird or for Baird. I'm not sure which one it is, but it's good that they're finally coming out. I think it's a little late, but I think it's a little better, you know, better late than never.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. We should also mention that there was a debate last night, and I would imagine most people had the opportunity to watch it. It was quite entertaining. I don't recall too many debates that were done in a format as good as this one. I really liked, as an observer, watching two candidates sitting next to each other, just about interrupting each other, and then having the moderator who was pushing both candidates to answer his questions. Clearly, Tom Barrett, I felt, came out on top. I don't think it was a really tough choice or tough decision, but he had some excellent points to make, and Scott Walker did his classic sticking to talking points, and no matter if there's a train moving towards him, he's going to stick to his talking points, even though he didn't look really too healthy or he looked too happy to be there, and I think that Tom Barry just dominated, but it's amazing that you can't knock Scott Walker off his talking points. No matter, you know, if the world is revolving in another direction, he's just going to keep going with what he has to say, which I think a professional quality for a politician is, it's really good for a leader of state, and hopefully somebody who has one foot in reality, it doesn't really look too good, but whatever. Probably the most important quote from the debate is something that Tom Barrett said, and we haven't heard that line yet, but I know we're going to hear it over and over.
I have a police department
that arrests felons. Do you want to play it?
Here it is. Ready?
Yes. Homicides, 122 average, down to 80. Auto thefts, down. I have a police department that arrests felons. He has a practice of hiring them.
There you go.
You know, that's a classic.
That, I think, I have to say, that was my favorite line of the night. I thought that came out of nowhere. I didn't expect it to come from Mayor Barrett. Usually you get these lines from Governor Walker, and I thought it was a wonderfully put, and I didn't see that Walker had a really good comeback for that at all. He kept pushing the trolley.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing with the talking points, is you can't adjust them when you need them right now. You need a new talking point to, you know, rebuff, and if somebody just unveils a new line right there on the spot, then you're sitting there with your old talking points, and it's not really helpful. So that was excellent on the mayor's part, I thought. And, of course, they went through all the other, you know, interestingly enough, this was something that was pointed out after the last debate, and I paid attention this time around. There was no mention of women's issues. that I heard. They were talking about crime. They were talking about John Doe. They were talking about Milwaukee. They were talking about the economy, the job numbers. But there was not a single mention of women's rights, and the whole issue of war on women seems to have moved to the background. And I think that's unfortunate.
We're going to hold that thought. You're going to go to a quick break, so hold on to that. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. The mood was raucous at the Majestic Theater in Madison on Wednesday night when State Representative Chris Taylor and Russ Feingold took the stage to warm the crowd up for Tom Barrett. Taylor, an up-and-coming leader among Wisconsin progressives, said, "We're not going to stand for what Scott Walker has done to our state," adding, "We want a governor who doesn't have a criminal defense fund. We want our clean, transparent government back." Feingold, for his part, lavishly praised Barrett, saying, "I've never met a more decent person in or out of politics. Barrett's inclusive style of governing is exactly what Wisconsin desperately needs right now," Feingold said. The former senator went on, in his lawyerly way, to make the case for recalling Scott Walker for three reasons. Number one, Walker committed a surprise attack on the people of Wisconsin by going after fundamental labor rights and voting rights, Feingold said. Secondly, Feingold added, the tactics he used were outrageous and ruthless. And number three, said Feingold, the governor's people are under investigation for criminal conduct. Then Barrett came on and vowed that he was going to win this thing, and said, "Walker wants to use this state as an experimental dish for the right wing. We're not going to let that happen." The crowd couldn't have agreed more, and they filed out, jazzed to campaign hard in these last few days. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz. We're speaking with Yuri Rashkin with Defend Wisconsin News Roundup, and I have Bill, my producer, on the line as well, who's going to be asking Yuri questions. Two. If you have any questions, you can call 877-497-1797, or you can go on our chat and you can ask questions from that. So, you know, I do find it interesting that the women have been kind of pushed to the back burner. And I understand that John Doe is an important topic, and I understand the economy is a very important topic, but you have 50% plus of your voters and constituents out there who just kind of got smacked down completely with bills that just removed their rights one after another. And I think if a woman was running for governor, I think that would have been more of a forefront. But with two men who are running, I think it just gets pushed behind. And it's for some whatever reason, I don't know why Mayor Barrett doesn't bring it up. I can understand why Governor Walker doesn't. But it just is something that just doesn't seem to be brought up in these debates.
Well, I can only imagine that they did some polling and they determined what issues were burning brightest and what scandals were most identifiable, and this is what they went with. But I think just even a passing mention, not the, you know, the different legislation that was passed would have been a good thing. All right, so there's lots to cover, so let's just cover a few more things. There's a post from Peter Barker in Assembly Dems that they've got three candidates that are urgently gathering signatures today. And so if anybody wants to get out, and I mean, I would imagine there's probably going to be a lot of people in Milwaukee today for Bill Clinton rally. But nonetheless, there's three candidates who are looking to need help getting signatures, and I can get that couple of phone numbers out. Is that all right?
Go right ahead.
All right. So I have these as first names. So it says, to help Jesse, west side of Milwaukee County, Waukesha County area, get signatures, call him at 608-434-4422. Then there's to help Sean, Germantown, Brown Deer area, call Kathy at 608-206-3350 or Sean at 414-640-2604. And to help Chad, who is in Menominee Falls in the Lisbon area, call Chad at 262-515-0064. I would imagine if you go to Peter Barker's page, you'll find that information there as well. Next, there's been some information floating around, and it's hard
before,
to say whether it's
Yuri,
rumor. Yes,
before you go on, can you repeat those numbers? I know it's a lot of numbers that you just kind of threw out there. Can you repeat it one more time, all four of those numbers?
Absolutely. All right. So this is to help Jesse, west side of Milwaukee County, Waukesha County area, get signatures. Call him at, drumroll, 608-434-4422. To help Sean, Germantown, Brown Deer area, call Kathy at 608-206-3350. Or Sean at 414-640-2604. And to help Chad in Menominee Falls, Lisbon area, call Chad at 262-515-0064.
Great, thank you.
Those are the numbers. Sure. Mm-hmm. Now, we have some reports here that says our friends at Wisconsin Election Protection have just received a very credible report of some seriously illegal behavior by door-to-door canvassers falsely and illegally advising people that if they sign the Recall Walker petition, they don't need to vote on Tuesday. If you are told this, call the police immediately and please pass this on. It's hard to say at these last few days before the election what is entirely true, what is entirely fiction, and most things fall somewhere in between. But the reality is that there's going to be a lot of misinformation. And bottom line is, if you're eligible to vote, you can either vote today absentee or you can vote on Tuesday, June 5th, and you really, really should. On top of that, there could be some illegal things happening, and don't let anyone tell you that you shouldn't vote. Because, you know, with people voting so many times in Wisconsin this year, I'm running all the time into people as I'm canvassing saying, what, vote again? Didn't you just vote? And so it's important to remind people that June 5th is what this is all about.
And if you don't sign up for absentee voting and don't get there by 5 p.m. today and you haven't registered, you can register still at the polling place. And I believe, and you need to call your clerk if you have any questions, but I believe you, as long as you bring proof of residence to the polling place the day of election on June 5th, then you can register without an issue, and you'll be able to vote. So if you're not registered, don't panic. Just go to your polling place the day of and vote. I don't want anyone to be stopped thinking they can't vote because they're not registered. And getting back to the canvassers, are those paid canvassers that the Walker administration has going out?
Well, you know, I figure this is an absolutely awesome time to be a communications person on the Republican side for Walker campaign, because there is no idea that is too bizarre or too expensive to try. They've got the money. You know, when you have basically unlimited finances and you have a deadline by which you really should be spending it, there is no idea that you don't want to try, that you can't afford to try. So there, you know, there's rumors of people being paid to host signs, to hold up signs. And realistically, with the money that needs to be spent by June 5th, I mean, if you have $100 million to spend in Wisconsin, you know, that's a lot of brats to buy, but you can also start to, and beer and cheese and all the good things we have, and brewer tickets, I'm sure. But in the meantime, they've got to get the word out, so they're buying everything in sight. To me, this is like the real Scott Walker economic development. Is buying state for the election time.
Well, at least it's that, I guess it's that trickle-down idea where the people who have the money, it brings it to the rest of the people who don't.
That's really interesting too, because maybe trickle economics actually works if you have a deadline by which you have to spend the money. Then you have to say, oh my gosh, I have to do something with this money now.
Or he could ask to put in his criminal defense fund.
Actually, it's called the legal defense fund. Right. All right. A couple of other news that needs to be covered. Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op has come out with a really interesting story. It's a brief one, but very important because we've got the jobs number being bandied around. And what they write is that a source in the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development, DWD, has revealed the DWD Secretary, Reggie Newsom, has ordered staff not to discuss new and disappointing data on jobs in Wisconsin until after the June 5th election. Reggie Newsom's assistant, Lauren Steinmeier, said that Newsom was traveling to Milwaukee, this is in quotes, and was unavailable to comment and wouldn't comment herself. Asked directly for a comment, DWD spokesman John Ditko refused to answer and said he would follow up later today. He has not followed up, nor have any members of the DWD Media Relations Department returned any calls asking for comment. So this is on Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op. We have, I mean, this is what we've been seeing, but they're coming up with numbers they want to have out. They're shutting down numbers they don't want to see out. There's Mayor Barrett mentioned unemployment layoff notices that are going out. Somebody else threw out the information that people's unemployment is ending, but the notices are not going out until after June 5th. And again, there's a lot of this is speculation because most of this is not sourced. But in the end, I think everyone has their mind made up, so we just got to go vote.
Well, it's, you know, Scott Witkoff's going to be on in a few minutes. We're going to talk about some of these numbers and the budget and what really happened, because Governor Walker has been really good at putting out all these interesting numbers that tend to support him when he really needs it. So,
right. He's done that before. He's doing it again.
And if Governor Walker does win and the real numbers do come out, first of all, he can't be recalled again. And second of all, he has even mentioned that he would look at taking away the recall. So if someone else gets in and does the same thing, there is no way to remove them from office.
Well, that was kind of an interesting line last night when he said that he was actually thinking that one of the things we need to do is to fix this whole recall thing so you couldn't recall people. And I think that just, if nothing else, that alone should get people fired up, because this is, you know, we have no recourse to handle somebody that we feel is it worthy of this. I mean, it's not that easy to get rid of governor in Wisconsin to begin with, but it is in our Constitution, and I guess this just maybe highlights his opinion of the Constitution, if nothing else, that, well, we can improve that, and we can fix this, and this is a Fitzwalker scandal over again. So, Scott Walker. You know, I've been kind of advising people, because sometimes it gets a little overwhelming with all the scandals and everything, and people get lost between Stewartgate and John Doe and everything else that's out there. I just say, you know what, maybe you should take a second and watch a really nice video from some people that are really promoting Scott Walker, like the you know, little the right-wing think tanks and everybody that put out these awesome videos about Scott Walker, because that's going to get your blood boiling all on its own. It's kind of refreshing, it's positive, but you're going to be so mad by the end of that video. You know, it's a nice kind of relief, because it's Scott Walker.
And that's where the money is all going to. He has so much money and so many ads. We're actually going to discuss that a little bit later with Mike McCabe and discuss the amount of money he's got, which is, in my mind, as far as I'm concerned, absolutely ridiculous for a governorship. Yuri, thank you so much for being on today. I appreciate it, as always. We are. I will not be on next Friday. I'm sure Bill covered that. We'll be having the best of, if you're listening to any of the radio stations. So I will speak with you in 2 weeks then.
Sounds great, sir. Have a great show.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
That was Yuri Raskin with Defend Wisconsin News Roundup. And coming up next will be Scott Witkoff. He is with Badger Democracy, and you are listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us, fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz, and we are speaking now of Scott Witkoff from Badger Democracy. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. It is a war on the workers, isn't it?
It is. It's that's how I see it anyway. I see a lot of these laws that were passed just to really hit down on the middle class and the working class and the most of the people in Wisconsin, actually.
Yep. Yep.
So, now, you wrote about the biannual budget and started the piece with one of the alleged lies that Governor Walker keeps saying, which is Governor Walker promised to control state spending and eliminate the historic $3.6 billion deficit without raising taxes. Then you go on to write the 2011-13 state budget signed by Governor Walker eliminating the $3.6 billion deficit without raising taxes. Can you talk about why you say it's a lie? Because that's his big talking point.
That's his, right. And in the debate last night, he kept saying over and over again, we balance the budget without raising taxes constantly, over and over. And you know, it's one of the first rules of propaganda. If you repeat a lie often enough, people start believing it. And I guess to start, you know, a little bit at the beginning was that it's important to understand that when Scott Walker took office, prior to any act that he signed as a governor, that Wisconsin was forecast to have a surplus of for the end of fiscal year 2011 was forecast of $56.3 million surplus. After he signed all his tax breaks to the corporations and the wealthy and opening loopholes, only then was there a deficit. So first we need to understand that he created this deficit crisis on his own. So that was number one. But subsequently what he did was he took $500 million in debt, so half a billion dollars in debt, and he literally put it on a giant credit card.
Hey, Scott, I'm going to cut you off. I'm having a really hard time hearing you. How, can you try calling back? Maybe we'll get a better connection.
Sure.
All right.
I'll call
you
back.
All right, okay. Thanks. All right. Scott's going to call back while we wait for that. He has this really – he's got two articles that he wrote. The first one is called Scott Walker's Budget Lie. Yes, lie. He receives a pass from the media on again and again. And the newest one he wrote, and they both came out this week. The newest one he wrote was Federal BLS chief dismisses any confirmation of numbers to Walker administration from the Department of Workforce Development. And the BLS is the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's a division of the State Employment Census Verification. And as a matter of fact, since we're waiting, that's a very quick blog. And it basically says that they – well, I'll read a little bit of it. It says – in a phone interview with Badger Democracy, Richard Clayton, chief of the Bureau of Labor Statistics Division on State Employment Census Verification, clarified the information he supplied to the officials with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Clayton writes, I confirm that the BLS has completed its process of reviewing and verifying the data. I did not verify or acknowledge any actual numbers or data to Wisconsin officials. I believe we have Scott, so let's get him back on. Scott.
Is this any better?
Oh, my goodness. A ton and a half better.
Stupid cell phones.
They're great when they work, huh?
Yeah, right. What did we ever do before them, right?
I know. What? I don't know. Walker old pagers, I guess.
Yeah. I heard you reading what Richard Clayton at BLS said, and, yeah, just another – of the lies that he actually tried getting away with in the debate last night, saying that they got an email from the Bureau of Labor Statistics confirming their numbers. That was a blatant lie. The information they got only verified that the study had been completed. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has not verified any numbers at all. And I just tweeted a little while ago that I've submitted an open records request with DWD to see the actual unemployment survey data that they sent to BLS. So we'll see
Scott, I'd like to interrupt and ask, you know, in watching the debate last night, I could not help but feel that there was so much misleading information. And I certainly appreciate you filing that request. But, boy, it certainly seems as though the media, and in particular WTMJ last night, could have certainly done a better job in vetting the information for both sides so that the public is not left with a he said, she said scenario and more or less forced to make a determination or an opinion based on that exchange that occurred last night.
Yeah. Based on faulty information to begin with, a false premise. You're absolutely right, Bill. Yep.
Yeah, sorry to take your thunder away, but please continue.
Oh, that's okay. so that's the bottom line with that, that nothing's been verified. And the rumor has it that DWD is not going to release those numbers early now. So they may be backpedaling on that. So to, just to get back to this budget, so Walker took $500 million in debt that would have been paid off by the end of 2012, and he actually accumulated more debt to push that off to fiscal year 2030. So there will be interest paid on it at a higher rate, and it won't be paid off now until 2030. The interest alone is $175+ million on top of the $500 million in debt. So that's how he's balanced his budget. And that is an accounting gimmick that he criticized Jim Doyle of using, both in his campaign in 2010 and all throughout the budgeting process. So for him to say that he's balanced the budget without using accounting gimmicks and without using raising taxes is a complete lie.
Well, in part, he had, didn't he have a deficit going on where it was $143 million deficit where he was going to have to trigger a budget repair bill? And then he comes out with the fact he's got $156 million surplus. That was something he just came out with that within the last month. And my understanding with it's a $300 million swing. And my understanding of that is that he just didn't pay some bills. And so without paying bills, you get more cash on hand, which shows you to have a surplus, which you actually don't have.
Yes, and I do address that in the blog. The memo from Mike Hipsch on May 10th says that Hipsch had reevaluated revenue with the Department of Revenue, and they found, just like they found more jobs, they found over $278 million in revenue that the LFB, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, missed in its February report. And so you are correct. It resulted in a swing of for a two-year period, 2012 and 2013, it resulted in a swing of $500 million difference in what the LFB forecast was, which, first of all, that's an unprecedented miss for the LFB. They just don't miss by that much. But the other thing is that $500 million, that's the amount of money that he restructured in debt that we're now going to be paying off until the year 2030, because in an election year, he wanted to show a balanced budget. And you hit the nail right in the head. It was, he just pushed that debt off, decided not to pay it. As Tom Barrett has said, he swiped the credit card. And the other thing that this revenue relies on, interestingly enough, is it relies on these highly suspect jobs numbers that Walker's citing. So part of that revenue adjustment is based on them saying and us believing that they actually created 23,000 jobs instead of losing 33,000 or 32,000 jobs, or whatever that number was. So, again, the huge swing that the Bureau of Labor Statistics would have missed. Because to have that added revenue, they had to have added jobs. So that is a highly suspect number, that increased revenue. And
well, Scott, these jobs that he's created, are these livable wage jobs, or is this just like every potentially – that Wisconsin is moving in the right-to-work state category should the Walker win? These are jobs that a lot of these employers want to pay anywhere from basic minimum wage to no more than $12 an hour, and then they complain that they cannot get the quality employee that they want because they are unwilling to pay a livable wage.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, you would have to think that that is the case. That's one of the reasons why I asked for the actual survey data, because it not only shows employees, but it also shows wages. So it would be a combination of the numbers of employees and the wages, so we can get an idea of just what are these jobs that you're talking about. And, you know, when you talk about the effect on revenue, I have a quote from one of the Fiscal Bureau analysis, and they actually talk about the effect of Act 10 on wages and revenue. And it says, here's the exact quote, income tax collections will also be reduced as a result of the additional state and local employee retirement and health insurance contributions required under 2011 Act 10. So revenue forecasts were dropped by $175 million in 2011 and $225 million in 2012 because of the effects of Act 10. So don't tell me that Act 10 wasn't a tax increase, because it took money right out of the pockets of the working families. And Scott Walker and the current GOP are directly responsible for that, as they are for the corporate tax loopholes. There's another paragraph in the analysis where they talk about the effects of corporate income and franchise tax revenues adjusted downwards, as they say, to reflect the effect of certain law changes, including requiring corporations that are members of a unitary group to file combined returns, which they reopened that loophole, repealing domestic production activities deduction, requiring throwback sales to be included in the apportionment formula, and doing this pre-2009 loss carry forward, which means that you can go back to 2009 in current tax years and carry losses forward to not pay corporate taxes, which is exactly why Diane Hendricks, the billionaire widow from Beloit who owns ABC Construction Supply and Roofing, can have huge profits of her multi-billion-dollar company and pay zero taxes.
Scott, I'm going to pause you there. We're going to take a really, really quick break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz.
Hello. This is Senate Democratic Leader Mark Miller. Every year, hundreds of thousands of hunters head to the woods for one of Wisconsin's strongest traditions, deer hunting. Unfortunately, it looks like hunters are going to be the latest victim of Governor Walker's bait-and-switch routine. He has hired an out-of-state contractor from Texas to recommend changes to our deer management program and named him the Deer Czar. The Deer Czar's potential plan for changes is following the same path other plans from Governor Walker have followed. Come up with a plan, give few details about the real plan, leave very little time for the public to digest it, and then do whatever he was planning to do anyway. Wisconsin's deer hunters deserve better. If Governor Walker is going to make radical changes to deer hunting in Wisconsin, he should let us know now what he is proposing to do.
And you're back with the Sarah Schultz Show. With Sarah Schultz, we are speaking with Scott Witkoff from Badger Democracy. Now, you had mentioned that they're able to carry back the loss from 2009. Well, 2008 was when everything really took a nosedive, and 2009, 2010 have been huge losses for these corporations.
Right.
So what you're looking at is this huge loss this of taxes, because they're able to bring these losses forward.
Right. Correct. That's exactly right. And the other interesting aspect is, as a result of his budget, Scott Walker is saying our reforms are working and we're creating jobs. Manufacturers are going to hire. There's another interesting aspect of these Fiscal Bureau analysis, because they analyze job creation and business activity. And I really want people to understand that based on the current fiscal climate in Wisconsin because of the Walker budget, the Fiscal Bureau has adjusted down their increase in manufacturing activity and output in production. In fact, there's a point here where they say overall business activity is projected to continue to expand, but at a slower pace than in 2010-2011. They're talking about reducing durable goods purchases from 7.2% in 2010, 8.1% in 2011, down to 5.6% and 4.5% in 2012-2013. Those are 3 and 4% drops in durable goods purchases because of Scott Walker taking money out of people's pockets and giving them to the quote-unquote job creators who aren't creating jobs at all. This analysis proves that what he's doing causes manufacturing and business activity to stagnate because there's less money in people's pockets to go out and buy the cars and the television sets, and they're taking on more of the tax burden. So that's something really important to understand as a byproduct of this budget. Not to mention the fact that 20 years down the line, our children are going to be saddled with $500 million in debt and $156 million in interest paid. And for anybody who says that everyone does it, Jim Doyle did it, they all do it. There's a PDF file that shows the history of restructured debt from 2001 to 2012. And Governor Tony Earle was the last governor who balanced the budget without restructuring debt. You go to Tommy Thompson, he had $127 million in debt that was restructured during Scott McCallum's short term. When Governor Doyle took office after McCallum, he had $175 million in debt to restructure that McCallum had pushed down the road. Doyle, I will never defend Jim Doyle as a governor, especially in how he restructured debt. During Doyle's two terms in office, so over 8 years, he restructured $500 million in debt. But understand that in Scott Walker's first year in office, he restructured as much debt as Jim Doyle did in 8 years.
And it's interesting that you're bringing all that up, and I'm glad that you did, because I know, especially with the debate last night, it almost seemed like Governor Walker was running against Governor Doyle, as he kept referring back to Doyle and referring back to Doyle. It's not, first of all, he's not running against Governor Doyle, so the point is rather mute, and it's even harder to swallow when you just spoke of the stats that you just, you know, the stats you just said.
Yeah.
So
imagine if Scott Walker were being intellectually honest, and he said, "Yeah, I balanced the budget, but I had to do it the same way Jim Doyle did, because I gave all these tax breaks to corporations to the tune of $2.6 trillion. Remember, he said that Wisconsin had a $3.6 trillion deficit when he took office. Well, guess what, folks? He was responsible for $2.6 trillion of that deficit because it didn't exist before he made his tax cuts and opened his loopholes. That's a fact. So if he had said, I had to give $2.6 trillion away to my donors and the largest corporations and the top 2% wage earners in the state of Wisconsin, but don't worry, I balanced the budget the same way Jim Doyle did. How would that sound? So he's not only being intellectually dishonest, he's blatantly lying about balancing the budget and not increasing taxes. And I have yet to see, the mainstream media pick up on this or challenge Scott Walker on this fact.
Well, one of the first things he did, the first three to five bills out of them, I think three of the five bills, I believe, were for tax breaks for the wealthy and for corporations. Was right. it were they struggling that much that he needed to give him the breaks? I mean, and I'm
no,
we're going to go on a limb
yeah.
and say a lot of them were donors, but
it no, it's interesting because you know when you look at the Fiscal Bureau analysis, you know they really they talk very specifically about you know the how profitable the years of 2009, 2010 were to Wisconsin corporations. So they talk very specifically about how profitable those years were, and now they say, well, 2012, 2013, we're going to see a plateauing of manufacturing profitability. Well, wait a minute. I thought if we did all these things that Scott Walker said would work, which he did, that businesses would be more profitable, they would hire more people. Well, it's not happening. And why is it not happening? Because it's been proven time and time again to fail. Yet
so
it gets all wrapped up, you know, it gets all wrapped up in a nice ribbon with a shiny bow on it, and Scott Walker repeats the lie often enough and people buy it. But the fact is, it's a complete failure. And the Fiscal Bureau nonpartisan analysis done by economic experts shows the effect. They're forecasting slowed manufacturing and business growth, slowed profits, and slowed hiring, all resulting in revenue losses. Well, Scott Walker didn't like that, so he created his own numbers by reinterpreting and recreating job gains and revenue forecasts by pushing $500 million in debt down the road and taking it off the books.
Scott, I'm going to end it there as a perfect end. Thank you so much for being on today. As always, you are very knowledgeable, and you're really helping to bring some of the stuff to light that just isn't – it's complex information. It's stuff isn't coming out there and getting out there, and people don't know and don't understand. So thank you so much for doing
that. Everything, thanks for everything you're doing, all the time you put into this, and you know, the people that you have on and getting the word out, you know, on alternative airways, because this is how it starts. I mean, this is how we're getting the word out and getting the truth out to people and, you know, restoring democracy, because the fourth estate, which is the media, is asleep at the switch. So we have to start waking them up.
Well, we're doing our best. So keep up the good work, Scott. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk with you soon.
You too. See you on the streets.
Okay. All right. Sounds good.
Bye.
Bye. We're talking with Scott Wyckoff. He is the blogger from Badger Democracy. His website is www.bdgrdemocracy.wordpress.com. You can follow his stuff there, or you can click on following and get your stuff sent to you in email. He's always got some really great things to write about. Coming up next is Mike McCabe with Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. We're going to be discussing finances and the recall. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz. Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and right now we're speaking to Mike McCabe. He's with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show, Mike.
Good to be with you, Sarah.
Thank you so much for being here. I know you guys have been working really hard. There's been so much with the recall going on, and I know you guys have been looking into all the money coming in and all the just kind of connecting all the dots here for everybody. You guys are just amazing at that. And we have seen record amounts of money coming into the state for this governor recall election. What are some of the latest numbers do you have for both the candidates?
Well, you know, we've seen about $62 million spent on this recall election for governor already. And, you know, just to put that in context, the previous record for the most spent in a state election was $37 million, and that was in the last election for governor in 2010. If you look at the candidates, Scott Walker has raised over $30 million. He has spent more than $29 million already. And Tom Barrett has spent about $2.9 million so far. And so, you know, Governor Walker has spent over 10 times more than his opponent in this race.
You know, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. I'm just going to really say this. For the amount of money he's spending per voter, he doesn't seem to be getting much in return with that.
Well, he's needed to spend all of that $29 million, and he'll need to spend more because he hasn't really been able to move the needle much. With tens of millions of dollars in spending, he still is having a hard time cracking 50%. And you know, he hasn't been able to move his public approval ratings at all. He hasn't been able to budge the poll numbers much. And so, you know, he's needed to spend all of that money and then some to have a shot at winning this race and keeping his office. You know, in addition to the little bit less than $3 million that Tom Barrett has spent, the $29.3 million that Governor Walker has spent, then you also have, you know, tens of millions spent by outside interest groups and that make up the rest of the $62 million that's already been poured into this race. And, you know, that outside interest group spending, there's a slight edge to the Republicans there, but it's not as pronounced as the fundraising advantage and spending advantage when you look just at the candidates. Overall, there's roughly a 3-to-1 spending edge for the Republicans so far in this race when you look at interest group spending and candidate spending combined.
Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, I was just curious. That's a point that does not get elaborated on, especially in last night's debate. There was a, you know, Walker keeps referring to all of these outside influences that are that caused the recall, that are providing money to Barrett's campaign, and yet the moderator and even the mainstream media just constantly glosses over the fact that Walker has extraordinary outside influences at his supporting him, whether they are literally coming from the outside by busloads. And in some instances, there are reports that people are being paid to do the boots on the ground activity for him, as well as the inordinate amount of money that is coming in from these financial supporters.
Well, certainly if you look at where the money's coming from, just in this last reporting period that covered roughly a month from April 24th to May 21st, Governor Walker raised more than $5 million during that period. If you look at the individual contributions that he received, 70% of the money came from outside of Wisconsin, 30% came from state residents. On the other hand, you look at Tom Barrett, he raised a little less than $3 million, about $2.6 million from individuals during the same period. Of that, it was the exact opposite in-state, out-of-state split. In Barrett's case, 70% of the money came from Wisconsin and 30% came from out-of-state. So, you know, if the issue is out-of-state money, then clearly, you know, when Governor Walker talks about out-of-state influence over this recall election, the big out-of-state influence, of course, is on his side, and he's getting over two-thirds of his money from outside of Wisconsin. And, you know, and then on top of that, he's got support, you know, to the tune of over $8 million from a committee called Right Direction Wisconsin. Now, that committee was formed to make it sound like it's from Wisconsin. It's actually an arm of the National Republican Governors Association, and virtually all of that money is from out of state. I've heard Governor Walker say that $40 million was going to be brought in from unions nationally to defeat him, and that's, he's just been blowing smoke on that issue. There's no way you can tally up the spending and the fundraising in this race and come up with anything approaching $40 million on the Democratic side, much less from only unions specifically. It's just not there. And in fact, if you look at the $62 million that's been spent, roughly two-thirds of that money has been spent on the Republican side. And most of that money, the considerable majority of that money, is coming from outside Wisconsin.
Now, when you talk about the right direction, the path you mentioned, which is the arm of the Republican Governor Association, I believe you said?
Yes.
Is that include all the commercials they're putting out, or is that just the money that's been donated to Walker? Are you including everything else that they're doing well in that?
That is money that they're spending on their own advertising. So in addition to all this money that has been funneled to Governor Walker to pay for his campaign's ads, and he's raised $30.5 million, and he's spent $29.3 million, but in addition to all the money that has flowed to the Walker campaign to pay for that advertising, there's also tens of millions that have been spent on his behalf by groups that are sponsoring their own ads. And Right Direction PAC is the biggest of those spenders. In fact, it's the biggest overall interest group spender in this election. And they've reported almost $8.7 million in spending. And that's sponsoring their own advertising in addition to the Walker ads that you see out there. So, and if you look at where RGA gets its money, this is a national group, the Republican Governors Association, and they've tried to create some cover by establishing this committee called Right Direction Wisconsin, so that people would think that it was some kind of homegrown, homegrown organization here. But the Republican Governors Association is getting its money from largely the same sources that are bankrolling Governor Walker. You know, Walker has gotten these huge donations from Foster Freeze, from Sheldon Adelson, the casino tycoon out in Las Vegas, from Bob Perry from Texas, you know, who was behind the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth smear attacks back in the 2004 presidential election. He's been getting all this money from all these millionaires and billionaires. Well, the RGA depends on those very same donors, and they're actually getting a lot of money as well, over $1 million from the Koch brothers of Koch Industries, who have not directly given money to Governor Walker. They have not been among those donors who've given $250,000 or $500,000 directly to Walker's campaign. But instead, what the Koch brothers have done is they've funneled some $3 million already into advertising sponsored by a group called Americans for Prosperity, backing the governor. And then they've funneled at least $1 million over to the Republican Governors Association that we know of so far. So, you know, at a bare minimum, the Koch brothers have put at least $4 million into this election, but they've routed the money through these front groups like Right Direction Wisconsin and Americans for Prosperity that are sponsoring their own advertising.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. Especially when you look at the legislation that they've passed and the legislation that they've been talking about passing, that these groups would be the ones that are supporting him. And it's actually sad because with all the money coming in from out of state, I almost feel like that the rest of the country should vote in this election coming on Tuesday, because apparently most of them have paid for our governor.
Well, you know, I think it's an incredibly important thing to think about here, is that we now have a system that is so sick that we've got millionaires and billionaires who can't even vote in this election who are supplying most of the money that is being spent on all the campaigning that's being done. If you look at the $62 million, most of that money has come from outside Wisconsin, from interests who can't even participate in the election. They don't have a vote, and yet they have an outsized voice because they have supplied most of the money for the campaign advertising in this race. And again, of $62 million, well over $40 million of it is spending on the Republican side, and most of that money has come from outside Wisconsin, and a huge chunk of it has come from a relative handful of millionaires and billionaires all across the country, from both coasts and all points in between.
Well, money seems to equal free speech. That's what the Supreme Court said. So apparently that's their free speech. Now,
and Sarah, I have to tell you, I've had a chance to be in some high school classrooms recently and on a couple of college campuses over in Platteville and elsewhere. And I tell you, if anybody wants to know how sick our system has become, all they need to know, they can learn by going into any classroom, the high school classroom, college classroom. And all you got to do is you got to ask these kids, how many of you want to run for public office? And that's all you need to know about the size of the problem that we have on our hands. Because those kids will look at you and they think, what are you, out of your cotton picking mind? And they'll tell you, it's just a millionaire's game. I can't be a part of that. I can't do that. And if you were to tell them, well, the Supreme Court has said that this is just all free speech, that, again, they'd look at you like you were from outer space and they'd say, what's free about it? You know, what exactly is free about all that speech? And that, to me, boy, I tell you, when you stand in front of a group of young people, you start to really come to terms with the depth of our problem, and you realize just how sick we've allowed our system to become.
We're going to be right back, so Mike, hold on for a second here. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Hi, this is Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse, a free podcast that you can subscribe to on iTunes. The long-awaited recall election against Scott Walker is only days away, and both parties are ramping up their efforts. Going into the final week of the race, the polls are all over the place. The new Marquette poll shows Walker with a 7-point lead over Barrett. However, Democrats claim that this poll is skewed to include more right-leaning areas of the state. Another poll came out that shows Barrett and Walker dead even at 49-49, with independents breaking heavily for Barrett. The Barrett supporters have been slow to show, but they have come through in fine fashion. The yard signs in Janesville exploded over Memorial Day weekend and now match or even outnumber the Walker signs. Both parties are sending in reinforcements for their candidate. Walker campaigned with Republican governors Chris Christie of New Jersey and self-proclaimed and demonstrated union-busting governor Nikki Haley. Many on the left have longed for a visit from President Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Neither one has shown, but the party is not going to disappoint. Former President Bill Clinton will be flying into Milwaukee on Friday to campaign with Barrett. This is a smart move. Clinton ran a strong economy and is one of the most popular politicians in the country. And when he leaves, the right wing can tear him to pieces without having any effect. If Obama came to the state, the right wing would attack him for infringing on states' rights. This race will come down to turnout. Let's hope that Barrett, Mitchell, Clinton, and you can drive out the voters. I am Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse, because it's essential for democracy.
You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and we're speaking with Mike McCabe from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Now, before we went to a quick break, we were discussing the donors and the amount. I call it the insane amount of money that's coming to the state for this. And we were speaking about how most of these donors they can't vote for them, but they're using the money as free speech to try to get their point across. What is it that they're getting? What do these donors expect to get from doing this? How is this going to benefit them?
You know, if you listen to the donors and you listen to the special interest groups and you listen to the politicians, you know, there's no connection between the donations and the public policy decisions that politicians make. It's all a big coincidence that the decisions regularly favor those very interests and that benefits regularly are funneled to those interests, but there's no connection. That's what we're told by the politicians, and of course that just insults the intelligence of American citizens. You know, people can see how this game is played, and here in Wisconsin, for example, over the last year we were repeatedly told that the state was broke. We were told that there needed to be drastic measures to put the ship of state back on course, that everybody had to tighten their belts. There needed to be shared sacrifice. Painful cuts had to be made because the state was broke. We were told that over and over and over again. And yet we just issued a report, you know, a few days ago where we shined light on 55 different items that we found tucked in the state budget bill, that we found passed as separate legislation, that benefited donors, that special interest groups that had donated almost $24 million. More than half of that money went to Governor Walker. A little bit less than half of the money went to state legislators, most of it to Republican legislators who were in control of the legislature and could usher through this agenda. 55 different items that we identified that benefited these interests. The items that we could actually attach a price tag to, we came up with a total tally of over $330 million that was given to these interests. So here's at a time where we're told that we need to cut almost $2 billion from K-12 schools. We need to cut vocational and technical schools by 30%. We need to cut back on health care programs like senior care and Badger Care. We need to do away with the earned income tax credit, scale that back, which means a tax increase for low-income people. Everybody has to sacrifice, and yet there was over $300 million laying around that could be doled out to these interest groups, new tax write-offs, pork barrel spending projects, all manner of kinds of perks and favors went to these groups. So $24 million flowed in, and over $330 million was returned to those donors. So they're getting a return on investment that you can't get in the best bull market on Wall Street. And so to think that somebody's going to write out a check for $250,000 or $500,000 and do it out of the goodness of their heart with no thought of benefiting from that contribution just insults the intelligence of people here in Wisconsin and the American people across the country.
So as Barrett said, Walker is executing a national agenda at the state level and at Wisconsin's expense.
Well, you know, there's no question that what issues have been pushed in Wisconsin, and it wasn't just collective bargaining, it's school privatization, it's voter suppression, it's this whole corporate agenda, all the tax write-offs and all of the breaks for big corporations and the corporate welfare. All of these issues are not unique to Wisconsin, and all of these policies are not unique to Wisconsin. It's not a homegrown agenda. It's very much a national agenda, and I think that explains why you've seen so much national money pour into this election. So many people who can't even vote in this election are dumping money here because these interests have a national agenda, and they see Wisconsin as a domino. And they want to make sure that domino falls in a direction that favors them, that knocks over a bunch of other dominoes in other states that will favor them. And so it's not that they're not concerned about Wisconsin's welfare. They don't care about people here. They just know that they're advancing a national agenda here in Wisconsin, and they see Wisconsin as a bellwether. They see us as sort of a pawn on a national chessboard, and they want to move that pawn in a way that helps them win this larger chess match. And I think here in Wisconsin, we have state elections that are supposed to be about the people of Wisconsin deciding how they want to be governed and deciding their own political fate. Well, it's pretty hard to do that when there's so much outside interference and when you've got all this advertising paid for with all this out-of-state money, you know, it's really bankrolled by wealthy corporations and millionaires and billionaires and interest groups across the spectrum.
Speaking of campaign money going to the media, can you explain possibly why the I don't know if we can or not, but the Journal Sentinel and the State Journal endorse Walker. What do you think they'll actually get out, or what do they expect to get from that endorsement? Do you think this is a way to get more money coming in to them for campaign ads with the paper, or is there other motivations behind this endorsing?
Well, I'm inclined to think that newspaper endorsements are more driven by ideology, the political views of top management and the owners of media corporations when it comes to newspaper endorsements, because newspapers aren't the primary beneficiaries of all the campaign spending. Where the money really goes is television. The majority of the money is spent on TV ads, and there's some radio advertising, there's some online advertising, direct mail is a big expense, but all of those expenses pale in comparison to the cost of TV advertising. The TV stations are cleaning up. They are enjoying a huge windfall, and this revenue has become an enormous cash cow for TV stations, and I think that's why you don't see TV stations very often doing stories about money in politics. They don't report on the issue of campaign finance reform. They don't talk about how money is polluting or poisoning our democracy, because they are the primary recipients of all that money. You know, literally campaigns operate as basically collection agencies for the TV stations. And so there's a huge conflict of interest when it comes to TV, and I think it explains why there is so little journalism that focuses on the cancer growing in the body of our democracy that is all about the money in elections. They don't want to talk about that. They don't want to invest any time in doing any journalism about that, because they don't want to close the spigot. They don't want to kill the cash cow, and that's a huge problem in our society.
The Republican publisher, the State Journal, does he have other media outlets that are benefiting from that?
Well, you know, there is the issue of cross ownership, and that's part of the problem here is that we used to have much stricter rules about media ownership, and you couldn't own more than one TV station in a market. You couldn't control all of the media in a market. And we really ought to get back to stricter rules about cross ownership, because we do have some of the companies that own newspapers now are heavily invested in other media like television and radio. And that's a great point, Sarah. It's a very important issue that people should think about, because that cross ownership, of course, can then color the owner's perspective when it comes to a newspaper, and it could well color an endorsement decision. Now, I'm inclined to think that newspapers are in by and large there's certainly less influenced by the huge money flowing from political campaigns to media outlets, because not much of it goes to newspaper advertising. But it is an important point to make that with weakened cross-ownership rules, some of those newspaper owners also are heavily invested in things like television.
Now, before we go, we've got about a minute or two left to cover some of this. Can you discuss a little bit about how much money has been put into the legal defense fund, and how much money he can actually put into that fund through his campaign donations?
Well, there was a transfer that was made of $60,000 from the Walker election campaign fund to this legal defense fund. And then in this latest report, there was another $100,000 transfer into the legal defense fund. Now the law says that funds can be transferred to a legal defense fund if the donor gives permission, but there's no reporting of which donor's money went into the legal defense fund. So the public is really in the dark about whose money is being used. And the Government Accountability Board says that it has information about which donors gave consent for their money to be moved, but the public can't see that. And so that's a problem that you know troubles me greatly, that you know we basically have to take the word of the Walker campaign and the Government Accountability Board that this money has been properly transferred and that the proper permission has been granted. But in any case, I think what's more troubling is just that we only know that $160,000 has been transferred, but we don't know which donors supplied that money. And Governor Walker, of course, has said that he's not a target of the investigation, but the problem with that claim is that state law only allows the creation of a legal defense fund if either you as a public official are under investigation or one of your agents is under investigation. So you know, it certainly appears as though Governor Walker is a target of the investigation simply because he has set up one of these legal defense funds. And that, you know, given what state law says about these the creation of these funds, it sure looks to me like he's a target of the investigation.
And I believe he's actually come out and said that he's not using the legal defense fund for any of the people who have taken immunity.
Well, you know, I think that was self-evident before. I mean, you know, I don't think, you know, they were sort of on their own. They had to get their own representation. But, you know, acknowledging it, I think, only strengthens the case that he, in fact, is a target of this investigation. And I think that was probably pretty apparent to most people already. But the fact that there's been stonewalling about where this money is coming from and what it's being used for, and the fact that it's sort of cloaked in darkness, I think only raises the public's suspicion here.
I have one more question for you, then we're going to go to break. I know I'm going to be a little over, but how, you know, Governor Walker is saying that he's doing this legally. Is there any way to double check any of this? I mean, is there this no transparency with this fund whatsoever, other than we know how much money is being put in and we're having to take the governor's word on this? Is that basically it?
Well, basically we've had to take the governor's word and the word of the Government Accountability Board. The Government Accountability Board says that it has been this fund has been established legally and that proper steps have been taken. And the Walker campaign has said the same thing. But there is no way, there's nothing in the public record that enables the citizens to double-check that. There's no way of knowing whether this fund was set up properly, whether everything is on the up and up, whether the money has been properly transferred, and really even what that money is being used for. That all is cloaked in darkness, and we can't know the answers to those questions. We simply have to take the word of both the Walker campaign and state election authorities.
Okay. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being on again today. As always, you are it's just full of knowledge, and I really appreciate your time and all your research that you and the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign has put into all of this.
Well, it's my pleasure, Sarah, and it was good to talk with you again, and hope to do it again sometime in the future.
Definitely. I'd love to have you back on, and once everything is said and done and you have all the final numbers, we can really discuss what the totals for everything are and maybe discuss how this doesn't happen again. So.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Sarah.
Hey, have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks. Bye. That was Mike McCabe with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And as you could hear, he does. They do a lot of great research. You can, I believe, the website is wisdc.org, or you can just Google Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, And so you could follow on and see where all the money is and have the trails for both the Mayor Barrett and for Governor Walker's recall campaign. We're going to take a quick break, and coming up next will be Bruce South with Michigan Rising and talk about the recall of the Michigan governor. You are listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Back, everybody. Our next guest will be Bruce Felk. Bruce, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did. You get a star.
Haven't gotten one of those since grade school, and I'm not going to tell you how long ago that was. That's great. Well, as Wisconsin is finishing its recall, and with our election being this Tuesday, your group is starting yours. So, can you talk about how Michigan Rising got started? And actually, before you do that, would you be able to at least tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got involved in this process?
Well, you already said my name. I've been, I guess, an activist for about, 5 or 6 years now. I guess it goes back a little bit further to the Bush years. The Bush years really got me started. I started with doing actions with MoveOn.org. And I actually had a very famous little campaign of my own against my Republican congressman. I live in a district that had been Republican for about 100 years. And Gary Peters in 2008
was the first Democrat to be elected, and I had my own little personal campaign against our Congressman Joe Novenberg, and I kind of took on the role of being the attack dog, if you will, and, you know, Democrat won. So that was some of my – we actually got a video, kind of a macaca moment for our congressman. It actually made the Keith Olbermann show, and so I moved forward from there. Now I'm involved in the recall.
Well, what drove you to recall Governor Schneider?
Well, I mean, I hope you've been following Michigan politics. I know you're really involved in Wisconsin politics, but Michigan is also a pretty bad place, but you guys have kind of stolen our oxygen with all the protests there. But we've got some very bad things going on here. I'm sure you've heard of our emergency manager laws, or otherwise known as Public Act 4, which has basically, I call it an abortion of democracy. There's 7 cities, and there's also some school districts that have been taken over by what are referred to here as emergency managers, and they basically have dictatorial power over cities and school districts all across Michigan. And interesting fact is that someone did some research and actually discovered that right now, including Detroit, although Detroit's a little bit different, they have a consent agreement instead of an emergency manager, which means they have a council of rulers, if you will, versus one person. Over 50% of the African-American population is now being ruled over by emergency managers.
Well, and I know there's a school district that they just, I can't remember where it is, but I was reading about it. Obviously, it's in Michigan. The emergency manager actually shut down the school itself and said it's now going to be a charter school, and basically fired all the teachers and said, we'll have to rehire you.
Yeah, I think that's Muskegon Heights, which is on the west side of the state. And, yeah, they turned it into a cyber charter school. And I think it's being run by a company called K-12. And K-12, you may know, is a member of ALEC, which I know you're probably familiar with, as are your listeners, what ALEC is doing all across the country as far as voter suppression bills and bills like the emergency manager. You know, all kinds of bad things are coming out of the ALEC bill mill, if you will.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say that you know, with your finance czars, you more or less beat Wisconsin to the punch, because otherwise we would be in worse shape, because there was a group in Wisconsin that was looking to put that legislation in, and your governor just happened to be quicker on the draw than ours, but the fact that Wisconsin was moving in that direction with different law firms preparing the legal documentation was actually leaked, and that got a lot of people here in Wisconsin riled up. So I'm sorry to hear that it happened for you, but you actually served as a buffer for us in
I guess
happening.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible law. I mean, Benton Harbor was the first city that came under emergency management, and the manager there, his name is Joe Harris, and I mean, this is the audio of him, you know, basically telling people, you know, they had a training for the emergency managers, and he was, you know, bragging about how the emergency manager is basically a dictator. And we talked about, you know, collective bargaining, even though Scott Walker dropped the bomb on you guys, Governor Schneider, you know, he dropped the bomb in a little bit different way. He just did little bomblets, if you will, in that the emergency managers also have the ability to void union contracts, and that's exactly what they've been doing. They've been, you know, firing police officers, voiding contracts. In the city of Pontiac, they actually merged the city of Pontiac Fire Department with another city. And, you know, there's just terrible things that are happening all across the state as far as you know, what's going on with the emergency managers and the impacts that they're having on cities and school districts.
Is there any recourse you have at all with this emergency manager law?
Well, that's an interesting question. You may have read, too, that we did actually have a repeal. We got over 250,000 signatures to put that issue on the ballot in November to repeal Public Act 4, which is the emergency manager bill. And the Secretary of State validated all of the signatures that we needed, and then a Republican consulting firm with a man by the one of the gentlemen that works there, his name is Jeff Kimmer, he also happens to sit on our board of canvassers, the Board of Canvassers ruled that there was a problem with the font size, even though experts have testified to the contrary. And now there's also been a hearing in front of the Michigan Court of Appeals, and we're waiting on a ruling to come back as to whether that's going to move forward and that repeal effort will be on the ballot in November.
So let me guess, he has interest in some of the emergency managers, or he'll end up being an emergency manager, right?
I haven't heard that, but he does work for a Republican consulting firm, so
no
connection there.
No. You know, I say that somewhat facetiously because these tactics that you have just described are part of the playbook that they are obviously using here in various degrees, and sounds like through our discussion with you, they're obviously using them in Michigan, and I have to believe that they are using these same tactics to whatever degree of minutia that they have sought to utilize and being proactive throughout the nation as part of a national plan to change democracy that we have known into the image that they want it to be. And I know that Alec has been a large part of this because, you know, most of these Republican legislators aren't smart enough. They got all they can do to write their own name and read their mortgages, let alone come up with some of these crazy policy decisions that they have done that have obviously come from some type of central clearinghouse within, you know, in the national, you know, nationally.
Right. Well, I mean, you're probably aware too. I mean, Alec has obviously been around for a long time, and one of the, you know, the main thing that they were formed around, Paul Weyrich, and you've probably seen the video of him telling a group of conservatives that he was speaking to that they don't want everyone to vote. They just want the right people to vote. And, you know, that's a really scary thought because that's exactly what's going on all across the country. We have actually voter suppression bills right now in front of our legislature that are being going to be voted on very shortly. And the African-American community is really up in arms. I was at a rally in Flint a couple of weeks ago where about 50 pastors actually came together. And, you know, they're talking about marching in the streets. You know, this is a time, just like what's happened in Wisconsin, this is a time for people to take to the streets because, really, our whole democracy, our whole concept of democracy is literally being aborted because of what people think are financial issues that can't be solved any other way.
Right, right. And I hope you guys don't turn out to be like Florida, which is going through a voter suppression activity now where they're trying to clear out what appears to be primarily, and that's not absolute, but primarily Democrats, progressives, and African-Americans and Latinos on their voter rolls so that they are not allowed to go ahead and vote regardless of what kind of other voter suppression tactics that they employ for the upcoming election.
Well, I don't think they are focusing a little bit on suppression, but what they're going about a little bit different way in here in Michigan. As I understand the bills that are being introduced here in Michigan, they're making it really, really hard to go through the registration process where you have to bring a birth certificate to your clerk's office or Secretary of State's office. I don't know about you. I don't know where my birth certificate is. If I had to produce a birth certificate, in order to register to vote now, I'd probably have to go through several steps in order to get my birth certificate. So they're making it a very onerous process to be able to register to vote. And pay for it, yeah, obviously. They're saying, you know, the Secretary of State here, Ruth Johnson, I believe she's making it so that even though it's not legality, they're making you in more than one place say that you're an American citizen. So they know where, you know, they know which side of their bread is buttered on, and they're trying obviously in every state that they can possibly do it. They're putting in as many voter suppression laws as they can because they know, in my opinion, they know they can't win a fair fight, so they know they have to cheat in order to win.
Can the emergency manager put in voter suppression bills as well?
Interesting you ask that question, because in Detroit, I was just talking with a friend about this last night that works on voter issues, election issues, and the clerk in the city of Detroit is claiming that through the emergency manager, they reduced her budget so much that she doesn't have enough money to run an election in the city of Detroit.
Can you do that? Can you actually stop elections because you've unfunded them?
I don't know. That's a very good, that's an interesting question, though, isn't it? Through a budget process, if you say to the clerk, you're going to get, you need, the clerk says she needs, let's say, just for an example, $1 million, and you give her $500,000, can you hold an election? Because, you know, they're not saying you can hold an election. They're saying you can run the election, but we're only going to give you $500,000 instead of $1 million that you need, that you asked for and that you need to run the election. So that's a good question. I don't know the answer.
And that's a federal law. If you're starting to muck with some of this some of the election stuff, that's federal. Is there any way you can get maybe one of the federal DA? I think there's sections DAs. I know in Wisconsin you've got your southeast section, southwest section. I don't know. I'm assuming Michigan's set up very close to that. Can you forward some of this to them and have the feds look at it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this to me would be an issue where it would seem like Eric Holder and the Department of Justice ought to be stepping in. And you know, whoever thought that we'd have to mandate through the budget process that you legally have to give the Bureau of Elections, a city clerk, enough money to run an election. I mean, I guess it's kind of, you know, it's another tricky way, another underhanded way of saying, yes, you can have an election, but we're not going to give you enough money to pay the people that need to be paid in order to do it properly.
It's constitutionally, in three different spots in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights about elections. I am absolutely floored that they are trying to defund elections so it doesn't occur.
Well, I'm floored too, but I guess I don't think that the Constitution actually says anywhere that you have to provide enough money to actually run an election. That would seem to be a foregone conclusion. If you're going to hold an election, you have to put enough money into the budget to actually hold the election. But, you know, this is another example of ways that emergency managers in Michigan and other election officials across the country who are affiliated with the Republican Party are trying to stop people literally from voting.
Well, getting back to the recall that you're doing, what is it that you need to get your governor recalled? Do you need so much signatures? What is it that you need to get done?
Well, obviously we need the signatures. We need, based on the numbers of the last election, we need about 807,000 signatures, which is about 300,000 more than I think you needed in Wisconsin. So in order to get enough ballot signatures, we probably need somewhere around 1 million to 1.2 million signatures in order to survive, validation issues. So that's what we're shooting for. We have a 90-day window within which to do it. So we have a little bit longer than you do in Wisconsin. But we have another very onerous step in Michigan in that, you know, when you guys got your signatures, they were verified and the process moved forward. You're going right to a general election after your primary. In order to do it in Michigan, we have to have, even if we get enough signatures, we have to have a referendum, a statewide referendum, which would, that's what would be on the ballot in November if we got enough signatures. And then after that, there would be a special election in probably February of 2013, and our lieutenant governor would be governor for the intervening 3 months.
Do you have any way to recall your lieutenant governor as well?
Well, they run as a ticket here. So,
okay.
It's different than Wisconsin that they run together. So we would be actually recalling both of them by recalling the governor.
That's interesting because I'm sure Bill will step in. I'm most positive they run together here as well as a ticket once the lieutenant governor has decided if there's a primary with it. And but they deemed that the recalls were separate in this. The GAB office, the Governor Accountability Office, deemed that our recalls were separate so that there was a separate recall for the governor versus the lieutenant governor. It's interesting that they've actually put them together and kept them together.
Yeah.
Thing I will chime in with is that, Bruce, when have you already engaged the recall process?
Yeah, we started May 5th. We had a rally in Lansing on May 5th. That was when we gathered that's when we got our first signature. So that's when our clock starts, if you will. So we have 90 days from May 5th to get the 1 million signatures or so. We had a lot of Wisconsin people come over. I don't know if I told you, but I've been in Wisconsin a lot In fact, I just got home last night, and I'm heading back there probably tomorrow. And we had John Nichols at our rally. We had the Forward Marching Band at our rally. We had a and if you want, if your listeners want to, we had a great show, a great lineup. If they go to our website, michiganrising.org, and I think it's in our video section, they can actually watch as much as they want of our rally that we had in Lansing, Michigan.
Oh, that's great. Well, one of the things that I wanted to raise is that they will stop, the opposition will stop at nothing to try and even repress or suppress the signature collection. And at least we experienced that in Wisconsin. And so I would make the recommendation that typically they are going after the weaker links in the recall chain, and primarily they are women and older citizens who are out recalling, getting signatures. And I would suggest that you pass on to your recall signature collectors that they have cameras and they have the phone number to the local police, that any time anyone from the opposition attempts to disrupt them or intimidates them, that they need to call and get a police record on the books so that there is a constant file of these intimidation tactics, because without the police record, no one can do anything to make a case against the intimidation aspects of the recall.
Yeah, I saw some reports when I've been in Wisconsin about you know, people being attacked and cameras being thrown to the ground, whatever. And so we haven't had any experience with that so far in Michigan. Obviously, it seems like our political environment isn't quite as confrontational as yours has been in Wisconsin, but I'm aware of the incidents that you're talking about. In fact, I was in Wisconsin from October of 2011 until January of 2012, so I was actually there. I actually qualified to vote in Wisconsin, so I was able to sign your petition. I was gathering signatures for you in front of the Labor Temple in Madison, so I've kind of done it all for you folks over there, too.
You know, now you are officially an out-of-state thug.
That's right. And I've actually given $14, I think, to the effort or something. So.
There's that out-of-state money.
I'm also outside money.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's that out-of-state money we were just talking about. Now, do you expect to see the kind of sensationalism that is being seen here in Wisconsin in regards to recalling your governor, or do you feel that this was just going to fly under the radar?
Well, you know, it's funny because even though I think Governor Snyder's doing things that are probably worse as far as policies go, there isn't our governor isn't as confrontational as Scott Walker is. So, you know, people are not in the same political mood now as they have been in Wisconsin for what I think about 16 months now, whatever it's been. So, you know, it's kind of fly under the radar. We're doing last time this is our second effort. I don't know if I mentioned that, but we had another effort last summer, and we didn't get hardly any media, so that's kind of why I came on this time. My role has been to get more media, get more, you know, get above the radar screen, if you will, so that people know that we're out there and we're gathering signatures. Today we have, or actually tomorrow, there's the Motor City Pride Fest. We'll have people we have a booth there gathering signatures. There's an event in Grand Rapids, Michigan that draws about 500,000 people. There's going to be a group of volunteers there. We're setting up permanent signing locations like recall people did in Wisconsin. So I'm trying to take as much of the success from the Wisconsin model, if you will, as I can to Michigan, and hopefully we'll have some of the success that you guys had in Wisconsin.
There's so many more questions I'd like, so I really want to have you back on, especially after our recall election, because I think our recall election outcome can really affect what happens in Michigan on both ends of that. So, but before you get off, can you give the website so people can find more information about what you guys are doing, and if people want to go and help you, they can go help you?
Absolutely. We'd love all the help we can get. It's michiganrising.org. And pretty much everything you need as far as coming and helping would be there. And I'm going to be back in Wisconsin tomorrow, and I'm going to hopefully be at a victory party at the Majestic Theater in Madison on Tuesday night. So I'm looking forward to coming back, and I'll be at the Great Dane on Monday with Ed Schultz.
All right, well, we're happy to have you back in Wisconsin. And good luck with everything. Hopefully one of these times I'll be able to meet you maybe down in Madison at some point in time or on your way back to Michigan. So thank you so much for your help, and good luck with your recall in Michigan.
Thank you very much,
we'll definitely be talking with you as this recall continues for you guys. So
thanks
thank you for
lot.
Being on.
Thank you, Bruce.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
That was Bruce Felk with Michigan Rising, and you heard the website to go to is www.michiganrising.org. And, Bill, thank you so much for your help today. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's been a trying show, but you guys have been, you've been wonderful, and the guests were great, so thank you. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the Sarah Schultz Show today. The music you heard was from Ken Longquist and Ann Feeney, and I will post a link to both their music on my Facebook page. You can download the show for iTunes, or you can listen to the show at archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz. You can also listen to the Sarah Schultz Show off the free Sarah Schultz Show app for Androids and iPhones. You can tune in Saturdays to WIDE 99.1 LPFM in Madison, Sundays to WFAQ 92.9 LPFM in Mifflinico, Waukesha, and Tuesdays to WHYS 96.3 LPFM in Eau Claire. And if you'd like to hear me on WORT, I will be on their election night special with Liz DiNovella. So that's going to be on from 8 to 11 p.m. on Tuesday. So I will be on that as well at some point in there. Remember, Wisconsin, we have 4 days left until the recall election. Remember to go out and vote. Your voice does matter. Have a great 2 weeks, everyone, and I will see you here on Friday morning on June 15th.